All the second stage tanks now pressurized. 35 seconds and counting. We are still going.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lindsay.
Are we beginning to see the formation of a fundamental shift in the American dream of home ownership?
A weekly mortgage market update.
20 seconds and counting.
Providing up-to-the-minute information.
The absence of Chinese investors in the real estate market, and they're really starting to have an impact, but it's only
on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
If you look at it on a dollar value, it's significant. If you look at it on a unit basis, it's inconsequential to the overall big market.
To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972.
Here's the deal. How much of the market, real estate market, is comprised of this type of property?
12, 11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start.
And now, here's
five,
your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome to the podcast, everybody. So good to have you with us. We're doing this podcast from Washington State, Eastern Washington. It's beautiful up here. I'm up here visiting my in-laws. My wife and family are here with me, and we're visiting in-laws for Thanksgiving. So happy Thanksgiving from Eastern Washington. If you, those of you that know the area, we're up here in Cashmere, up in the mountains. I have a spectacular view of the Cascade Range. I wish I could show you all the picture I woke up to the other day. It was absolutely spectacular. But anyway, today we are doing the podcast as a result of some technology issues. We had to record each of the segments, and then thanks to the superior editing skills of our program director, he's putting this all together and uploading it. So if you dialed in to listen to it live, I apologize. There were some issues. I could not get dialed in and connected to the podcast to launch the program. Very unusual. First time in 8 years we were not able to do that. But we're still getting a podcast done. So while we couldn't do it live, we were able to get it done via recording and uploading and putting it all together. So anyway, appreciate you tuning in. Got a lot of conferences. It's all on our website. Check out our website there. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors. Our sponsors are ArchMI, creative and innovative RateStar program, Motivity Solutions with their real-time dashboard system, as well as Simplifile, connected with your closing agents. They have got electronic communication tool that is just so effective, as well as Motivity Solutions. Very grateful to Motivity. Helps get the word out on our podcast, as well as Finastra, are helping move your world forward through some of the most innovative technology out there. It's great to have all of our sponsors with us. The Mortgage Collaborative, forgot to mention them. Can't miss those folks. And also a special thank you to our regular friends that are on this podcast, Joe Farr, Alice Alvey, now Alan Pollock, who's become a regular. Andy Shell is not feeling well today. I'm not able to join us. But with that, let's get in and hear what the MBA's update is. Let's listen to what Rob has to say. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Rapport. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week was busy in Washington with the House of Representatives passing legislation to reauthorize the National Flood Insurance Program. This long-term reauthorization will provide certainty to homeowners and businesses that depend on the program for flood damage protection. Also last week, FHA released its annual report to Congress. MBA issued a statement praising the FHA for improving the value of the single-family mortgage insurance fund. The other big news in Washington last week was CFPB Director Richard Cordray announcing his retirement. MBA's statement congratulated him on his successful tenure at the CFPB. The weekly mortgage application survey showed that mortgage applications increased 3.1% from 1 week earlier, and the average contract interest rate for a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage was unchanged at 4.18%. Registration is now open for MBA Summit on Diversity and Inclusion, taking place December 4th and 5th here in Washington, D.C. Thanks for joining me this week on the Mortgage Minute.
We're very grateful for the partnership we have with the MBA. We work closely with them and very grateful for all that they do for our industry. Thankful for our industry and thankful for the leadership that comes through the MBA. Now let's head over to listen to Les Parker and his macro update on the markets. Les?
Thanks, Dave. This is Market Logics Live, sponsored by Loan Logics. It's that time of year when China calls the growth. Every sachet shares seems to say, Merry Christmas, may my people's dreams come true.
It's that time of year when
It's that time of year when OPEC China declares its next year GDP and CPI. 2018, China will grow 6.5% and inflation will grow 3%. It's amazing how their annual declarations become reality. Meanwhile, back in the USA, rates are going nowhere. There is hope for the bulls, but the technical trend remains the friend of the bears. These views are my own. Go to LoanLogics.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
Joe, so good to have you with us, and happy Thanksgiving to you as we do our special broadcast today, our turkey broadcast. Maybe we should call it that, but anyway, what's the market? The market's being Turkish?
Well, it's down a little bit today. Not a lot. It's down 430 seconds. The leading indicators came out this morning and was a little stronger than expected, but the market really didn't move until after that came out, so I can't say that that was a big cause. Good to see the stock market's up nicely. It's up 100 points this morning, so that's good.
Yeah.
So not a lot going on today. Kind of like last week as well. It was a fairly quiet week last week for MBS. Prices did improve during the week by about 530 seconds. Like today, the economic events didn't really cause a great reaction, and we had some pretty important events. We had October retail sales. Yeah, I was surprised to see after a big increase in retail sales in September, October retail sales exceeded those sales. So I would have expected a little bit of a drop back as we got through the hurricane-related gains, but you know it held strong. So that's the best level of the year, so it was good to see that. Core CPI came out at 0.2 in October, up 0.2, and that was as expected. Annual rate of 1.8, up from 1.7 in September. Housing starts showed a big increase. They were up 5% overall, but in the South, up 17%. And you know what's the cause of that? It's rebuilding after the hurricane. So. And then, as I'm sure everyone knows, the House passed its tax bill. And again, no big surprises in that tax bill, so it really didn't have an impact on MBS prices or mortgage rates during the week. And then looking at this week, Dave, it's a short week, but there's still several pretty significant events. We got existing home sales coming out tomorrow.
Yeah.
Comes out at 10 o'clock. A slight increase is expected. Durable orders on Wednesday at 8:30, consumer sentiment Wednesday at 10, and then the minutes of the November 1st Fed meeting come out at 2 on Wednesday. So Wednesday's a big day this week.
Yeah, Wednesday.
Good to know that the House and the Senate are home for the holidays, so we shouldn't hear much more about the Senate-based tax plan, but maybe when they get back. And then something interesting is going on in Germany with Angela Merkel's government.
She's
having a hard time pulling a coalition together. Apparently it fell apart last night. Yeah, I bring that up only because when you have something like that, it creates some uncertainty. And quite frankly, sometimes uncertainty is good for mortgage rates. So we'll see how that unfolds over the next week or so. So that's pretty much it.
So even though it's a short week, it is a significant week, especially, and a lot of it's all on Wednesday, except existing home sales tomorrow. But that's really interesting. So anyone sleeping or wanting to take controlling interest rate risk or has a closing that's coming up real close, better not be sleeping in, or if they are, they be having their phone with them and log in and have the MBS quote line rate information come right to you. So nice thing with your mobile app. I tell you, it's so nice because no matter where you're at, like I'm traveling in Washington State, I'm able to bring up and look at everything that's going on real time. It's perfect. Appreciate you. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You
too,
Dave.
Appreciate you being here with us. Have a great one.
All right. Thank you.
Let's take a quick break, and we're going to hear from one of our sponsors.
Are you using one of those expensive CRMs that your loan officers won't use? If so, then give my friends at Velma a call and let them help you create a customer journey that relies on the data and not on loan officer interaction. I encourage you to consider working with Velma to create a truly automated marketing experience for your organization. Velma makes marketing automation easy. Schedule a demo today at Velma.com, VELMA.com.
The Mortgage Collaborative was founded by former chairman of the NBA, John Robbins and David Kittle, and leaders at the forefront of the diversity movement in the real estate industry, Jim Park and Gary Acosta. The Mortgage Collaborative is the nation's only independent cooperative. The Collaborative provides its members the opportunity to meet and form meaningful relationships with top mortgage professionals and leaders in our industry. In a relationship-driven business such as ours, often who you know is as important as what you know. To learn more, go to mortgagecollaborative.com or call Rich Swarbinski at 440-552-0691. The power of the network.
Al Alvey, so good to have you with us on this Thanksgiving week. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Dave.
So are you staying there in Ohio for Thanksgiving and everyone's coming down there? Or are you going back to Michigan and joining up with all your family?
We actually are going to see some friends in Columbus, Ohio. So it'll be a fun week, fun day.
Well, good for you. Well, what do you have for us on a legislative update?
Well, there's a lot going on. For those of you who may have read the MBA news link on the legislative front, there was a long list of bills that moved their way through the House. I won't list them all now because I think if I just fire off names, people won't know what they mean anyway. So I'll follow up with kind of that full list on next week's show where we can have a few more minutes to talk about each one of them and the likelihood of where they'll go. The other main activity that happened was obviously the movement of the tax bill. So we have that both the House and the Senate have moved the tax bills forward. And what really did was it opened up some breathing room for some of the regulatory relief bills to go through. So the regulatory relief package was actually presented on the 16th by the Senate. And I did have a chance to go through this. It's not too terribly long, 86 pages, you know, so by compliance standards, it's not too long.
Short read.
So what's interesting is everything that it picks up. So many of the things in this regulatory relief packages are bills, separate bills that we've talked about on the show in the past. So I'm going to give you a quick synopsis of what's in this. The MBA has done a summary, too. I have a little bit slightly different spin on how I like to see this. So there's a component on it that gives a safe harbor for portfolio lenders to offer more of a non-QM product. Now, this is non-QM by Appendix Q standards, which is essentially the underwriting standards. It's not opening up the door for prepayment penalties and negative amortization stuff, and it really only applies to covered institutions that are $10 million or less. So really meant to help assist some of the smaller credit unions and community banks have their own type of lending as they've always done that's supported by the risk in their portfolio that they've been able to manage. And a unique one that was in here was this no appraisal required for rural properties. So what they've said is if you make three attempts and the loan amount is $400,000 or less and you're a federally regulated financial institution, these loans would not have to have an appraiser and have an appraisal.
Wow.
So, they may use other means. Obviously, they'll want to validate the value for their own purposes, but they may use an APM or may use a BPO or some other method or a non-licensed appraiser, maybe a trainee or something. So they'll have to come up with what they still have to validate as a reasonable value, so they can't put the risky stuff in there. But it was an interesting component. Another component is, throwing in that now the threshold, offering a threshold for 500 loans instead of the lower threshold for lenders to be exempt from HMDA reporting. It does include the transitional licensing for SAFE Act. So that's probably one of the biggest things a lot of entities would like to see get through, especially in the lender space. It does include the access to manufactured homes, which would be trying to exclude essentially manufactured home dealers who don't get paid on commission, from having to be looped into the SAFE Act requirements. There's a few other things in that I think are also important. There's when you get into Title III of this rule or this proposed bill, I should say, the veterans component is a big one, that they are going to be adding some medical collection relief for veterans, especially if the collection is coming from the Department of Veterans Affairs, delays with interdepartments for payments. It's going to put in a dispute process. It's going to allow for deletion of some of these collections. So that's a big win for veterans. And then another component that got looped in would be extending freeze alerts on your credit report for all consumers for a year instead of just 90 days, and that everybody would be given a free annual credit report freeze. Because what's happening with more and more freezes, right, is more and more ID theft instances of large volumes of consumers get exposed. Some of companies are charging for various steps within that process. So I think this is designed to kind of put a handle or, put a little cap on that. So we'll see what happens. It's a formal bill that consolidates a lot of items that are, you know, no negatives to the mortgage industry and regulatory relief package as President Trump had promised. So the second thing I wanted to make sure I had a couple minutes to talk about is the FHA actuarial, say that five times fast late in the day, report.
It is a mouthful.
Yeah. So, I mean, they have $1.16 trillion of business in force right now. So when you put the HECM loans with their forward mortgages, so when you put the reverse mortgages with the forward mortgages, their capital ratio did drop a little bit, but they're still over 2%. That's been the news, right? So, but what I like to see is that the forward capital ratio is still at 3.3%, but that doesn't include any of the disaster impact. What I recommend everybody take a look at is the change in some of the data within that. As FHA looks to say, you know, are they going to loosen or tighten credit? Where is their credit bucket now? And I love the credit score table that they have. They do this every year, and it's just startling to see where FHA's sweet spot is. They've actually dropped in how many loans have a 720 or higher credit score. They do less of that business now than they did in 2010, 2011, and 2012. They're doing a lot more business in that 680 to 719 as well as the 620 to 670 credit score buckets. And I think that's huge because, you know, it shows that that's really what works for them. Now, what's gone away is those low credit scores. So those of you who are still teetering in below that 619 credit score range, that is less than 8% of their total population. So it's just important. Use the metrics that are in that report to align where your corporate risks are and, you know, make sure that you're not kind of in a under the microscope, so to speak, where things may be causing some problems for you. One of the interesting things is that average DTI is rising. So keep an eye on that. When that just moves in small amounts, it means a lot of loans have a lot of higher DTIs. Also, for the DPA, the down payment assistance, the bond loans, those are making up still less than right around 10% of overall their endorsements. And, you know, there's a lot of push out there to do the down payment assistance, especially through the state bond agencies. Those programs are just financial loss leaders, not even a leader. They just create a loss.
No leader about it other than leading in it.
Yeah, a lot of sales folks really want that product, but it never has been. You know, as long as I've been in this business, it's been that product has had the same stigma with it, with so little income that can be earned on it. So, it's not a giant piece of FHA. Still, most funds are coming. 60% of the FHA borrowers that have their own funds. Another 26% get them from a gift from a relative. So lots of business out there where you don't have to rely on the DPA. So I'll leave that with you, Dave. Some tips for everybody to head back, look at that report. It's laid out really well to be able to zero in on some of the things that might interest you related to credit risk on FHA loans. So that's my report for today.
And where can they find that report again, Alice?
Well, you can get there quite a few ways. The Mortgage Bankers Association's news link that they published, I think it was today, had the link to the report. You can also just search it in any search engine to put in the FHA 27, actuarial report for the MMIF. So the Mutual Mortgage Insurance Fund is the report that came out. So that should come up with any. Yep. So, and I'm sure it's at the HUD website too. So. Lots of good info in there to check your lending standards.
Good. Well, we'll do it. Thank you so much. And hope you and Andy have a wonderful Thanksgiving with your friends there in the Ohio area. And we're up here in Washington State looking at some snow in the mountains. And it's just absolutely beautiful. It's really fun. Yeah. Thank you so much, Alice. Have a very wonderful Thanksgiving. I almost said Merry Christmas. I don't want to rush it. Thanksgiving. We got to get through Thanksgiving.
And to all our listeners, I wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. We all have a lot to be grateful for, and happy Thanksgiving.
I'm grateful that you're part of the program and have been for 8 years. It's wonderful. You, Joe, and so many. Thank you so much, Alice. Have a great one.
Thanks, you too.
We're grateful for all of our sponsors, and now we're going to run over here from David Bolin of Finastra. David?
Hey, thanks a lot, David. Finastra is extremely proud to be a key sponsor of the Lickin' On Lending program. known formerly as D&H, Finastra's global lending division provides end-to-end solutions and innovation to the full spectrum of lenders, including independent mortgage bankers, community banks and credit unions, and even the largest banks globally. Learn more about how you provide an innovative digital experience for your borrowers by leveraging our multi-channel point-of-sale solution, which includes the new MortgageBot Mobile, by visiting our website at finastra.com.
Simplifile has technology that gives you the ability to collaborate with settlement agents via real-time chat and messaging, allowing you to track changes, send, receive, and validate documents, as well as obtain status updates and deal with issues as they arise. All of this in a real-time electronic communication exchange. And best of all, you have a complete audit trail of all communications. To learn more, go to simplifile.com or call our good friend Nancy Alley at 1-800-460-5657.
We've got Alan Pollock with us again, my co-host of the new radio program, Tech Stack Radio. You're launching in January. So excited to be doing this with you, Alan. Good to have you with us this fine day, and happy Thanksgiving to you, friend.
Thank you, David. Happy Thanksgiving week to you and everybody else. I think today is probably best to talk about our new radio program.
Yes, great. That's a good time. Give us an
perfect time.
Tell some of our listeners what they can anticipate. I'm really excited. You come up with some great ideas, friend.
Oh, thanks. Well, a couple things. I think first, us connecting with our audience during the broadcast, and then not everyone has the chance to join while we're live. So also it will be after the broadcast. And, you know, we're hoping to really bring some good topics and bring our audience to come and chat with some of these different folks. You know, there's so many different technology platforms. I was just reading today a company called Glow. They're a broker, and they've created a chatbot technology that allows the consumer
to chat through.
That's right.
They're a mortgage broker.
And they allow
they're a mortgage broker now getting in the technology business. I love these stories. So a mortgage broker turned technologist.
Yeah. And I think that's, you know, when you ask me all the time, what is a digital mortgage? I think it's more than what, you know, some folks have sort of sliced it out to be. I think it's everything digital. And I don't even think it's fully defined. I think we're going to see so much innovation over time. Chatbots, David, by the way, have been a hot topic probably for 2 years now. And what's unique about them is they're connected to the back end, to a database, to machine learning, to artificial intelligence. So what Glow has done is they've made it where a borrower can chat, and they basically go through an interview process, and the data that's gathered goes through a process on the back end that determines what's next, what question is next, what can be offered, and it will automatically search different products. So Glow has actually said that they have over 15,000 mortgage products for residential and other types of mortgages. So they ultimately are using technology to create a great borrower experience and to automate a process on the back end.
That's awesome. I love to hear about some new innovation that's going on out there. One idea that you've come up with is, I love this, is Sound Bites. And tell our audience about that and how you're spelling it. I think it's very clever.
No problem. So Sound Bites is spelled B-Y-T-E-S, just like a data byte. And, you know, we go to these conferences and we have these speed dating sessions. And so this is a way for us to get a quick sound bite, maybe 5 minutes to 10 minutes maximum, of different folks within our industry, whether they're lending institutions, whether they're banks, whether they're technology vendors, even other types of vendors, people that are doing different things with technology and assisting our industry. And so these quick bites will be a great way to introduce and offer, you know, a lot of exposure to some of these companies that may not typically have that exposure.
It's outstanding. I'm excited to be doing this program with you. Wish you and your family a wonderful Thanksgiving. We're going to have 34 people over to my in-laws' place, and I know you are going to a gathering about equal size. That's crazy. I thought we were the only ones doing it that
exciting.
Big. You're going big.
I'll tell you what. You talk about TechStack Radio to your family. I'll talk about it to my family, and we'll get a couple more listeners.
Yeah, we'll pick up about 68 new listeners just between our two Thanksgiving parties. So good to have you with us, Alan. Thanks so much for taking time. Happy Thanksgiving to you, friend.
Likewise. Thank you.
Remember, folks, we've got our TechStack Radio program. Alan and I will be doing it. It's being launched the first week in January.
Folks, we're going to be right back with a word from our good friend Jim Jump at ArchMI. Jim?
Thanks, David. Let me tell your audience a little bit about ArchMI RateStar. RateStar is the most sophisticated pricing solution for mortgage insurance quotes ever built. RateStar has an advanced revolutionary design. It's simple to use, it's easy to access, and it's fully mobile. You can access it anywhere, anytime. RateStar provides a more sophisticated and dynamic pricing solution, far superior than conventional rate sheets. It's available on loan origination systems, through many pricing engines, and it rewards your origination of high-quality loans, again, with our most competitive rates. Of course, RateStar is backed by ArchMI's people power, providing superior support and service whenever you might need it. For more information about RateStar, please go to archmi.com or archmicu.com for credit unions. Thanks, David.
Folks, we're going to be right back after we hear from our friends at Motivity Solutions with the KPI of the week, apt underwriting. John Maynell, take it away.
Hi, Dave. Thanks very much. Great to be back. And this week's key performance indicator is application to underwriting cycle time. This KPI is a measurement delivered in business days, and tracking this metric helps lenders ensure that their processes upstream from underwriting are as efficient as they can be. Our clients generally find that the sooner their qualified borrowers receive an underwriting decision, the less likely those borrowers are to shop around. So this KPI can ultimately boost app to funded pull-through as well, which is the KPI we focused on last week. So we're really beginning to connect the dots between operational efficiency and customer satisfaction. And once again, this and other KPIs we will be talking about in the coming weeks always demonstrate that what gets measured gets results. With that, I will thank you again, Dave, and turn it back to you.
Thanks so much, John. Check it out, Motivity Solutions, motivitysolutions.com, or call them at 303-721-9000.
Folks, we are doing a series of podcasts on social media marketing. It's actually digital marketing. And we have with us today someone who is very knowledgeable and is working with companies to help get the word out. He's doing it through Google AdWords. He also builds websites. So we're going to get some basics down on what you can do and how to build a website. What are the key things you need to consideration? What are best practices? Is also, what tools should you use? Is Facebook the right tool? Google AdWords, Google Plus? I mean, there's so many options for us to get the word out. So let's get over to Tom Fleicher, who is with us. You know, a little bit about, let our listeners get to know you a little bit. So a little bit about your background, and I met you through my business partner, Beth Ossinger, and so grateful for that. And I've been so impressed with our conversations that I decided to engage you for our own business, and we're excited to have you now engaged with our listeners on the radio program. I'm really impressed with your knowledge, but more importantly, your approach. You, so many people out there are selling themselves to saying, I can get you all this, I can do all this. You did not approach it that way, which is what really got my attention, is you're known for your integrity and you're known for how you go about your representations. And I think that's why I'm so excited for our listeners to hear what you have to say. You're going to not hear, listeners, some wild-eyed, you know, hope to things or theory. This is someone who's actually been doing it and getting results. And so, Tom, let's get into it. Tell me a little bit, tell our listeners a little bit about your background. You've been in computers. You used to work with Beth and a previous employer together. Talk a little bit about your background and how you got into doing this.
Yes, sir. Been doing IT, software development, and information technology, corporate IT, for most of my career. Been doing web development since the early 90s, just kind of as a hobby. You know, it was one of those things that I'd do at nights and weekends. I'd build websites. Little by little, you know, I started to have several, you know, friends and family type it just grew word of mouth. And before I knew it, I had several clients that were doing really well on the internet, and they wanted more of what I could provide. And things looked good. So I took the leap and left the corporate world in 2013. I did. I went full time with Broad Street Consulting starting in 2013. And we've been really just focused on existing clients and new clients growing, I would say, rather slowly compared to others, but really just slow and steady growth and continuing to help customers reach new customers and increase sales. And that's where we just try to stay focused as a website, not as a decorative item, something you kind of add to look good or something like that, but really focused on how to use the web to generate revenues and grow your business.
Hence the definition of digital marketing.
and it's everything's on the web or on a digital basis versus the old-fashioned way. What are you seeing? I think what I'd like to get your view on digital marketing, and is this something, I mean, it's been around for a little while, but it seems to be taking off at an extraordinary rate. Could you give us some insights into that?
Sure. Yeah, in my mind, it's been around quite a while, you know, at least from the beginning of the web, because, you know, once you could get a website out there, you had the opportunity to reach, you know, all the way around the world. And so, but yeah, one of our clients is actually 110 years old. The business was started, I believe it was 1906 or something like that. And so,
wow,
this is a company that has learned to change with the times. And so when I started coming around 10 or 15 years ago saying, hey, you really need to think about the internet, you know, and it wasn't hard for them to realize that, you know, they've gone through a lot of changes over four generations. Clearly, you know, nobody was using the yellow pages. Nobody's looking at the newspapers for ads. And so how are we going to reach people, and how do we connect with our existing customers? That company in particular is in a small town in South Carolina with one red light, and a town of about 900 people, and they've got, you know, 14,000 followers on their Facebook page. They have the ability to, you know, 10,000 in their email marketing list. They can bring people into the store when they want to. It's extremely powerful for a small business, a local business, to be able to reach their people, tell them what they'd have for sale, tell them what deals they've got, and then bring them in. And so all of our clients have used these technologies differently for different advantages, but that's just one example.
When you're looking at digital marketing, it has been around for a while, but talk to us about more and more people are moving to it. What's the right word? I mean, there's more inertia, more movement towards digital marketing than ever before. At least that's what I'm seeing. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Yeah, I think the idea is to, you know, the money has to go where the eyeballs are. And so, you know, just like 20 years ago, we were looking in the yellow pages for things. Now we're Googling things. And, you know, we're not necessarily watching as much TV. We're listening to podcasts and we're watching YouTube videos and things like that. And so it's really just a matter of really putting the message where the people are. And that is definitely shifting away from traditional media and toward what we call digital media.
When you look at some of the trends, specifically with Google, has there been advancements that would cause people to want to move towards this more so than even before?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's becoming, well, particularly local. I mean, people that have been in business, let's just say for 20 or 30 years, you know, it's taken a while to realize how they can take advantage of these things. You know, one of the things Google did a number of years back was really focus on geography and your location. And so, you know, it started out by, you know, if you and I, you know, in two different states had typed in, you know, mortgage broker, we're going to get two different kinds of results. You're going to get people close to you and I'm going to get people close to me. That has little by little just gotten more and more sophisticated to where, you know, now we can target people based on, you know, just being how many feet away or how many miles away, you know, so
really,
we can really be so much more targeted. Yeah, we were actually looking at a thing Facebook was doing now where you can put a little beacon on your store, and it basically, like, when people are going by, you can effectively broadcast ads based on their proximity to your store.
Is that new?
Yeah. The beacon thing is fairly new, and I haven't actually implemented or tested it out. But those are the kind of things that are coming all the time, and it's really just about, you know, where are you? And the assumption
right.
is that you probably want something close by.
When you're dealing with companies like what we are and many lenders on the market, well, we have, you know, many of our listeners are local, have a local presence. And then a number of lenders are on a national basis. So we have a good number of loan originators that serve a specific geographic market. You're telling me that you can literally run Google AdWords that are going to only attract people within the market they want to serve. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. That's what we do every day.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what your company does. We've talked about you and your background a little bit. You know, talk specifically, we know how you got started in this, but what do you do for clients? I mean, I think it's so fascinating. I know what you're doing for us, and I'm excited to share this again with our listeners, but what do you specifically do for clients? How do you engage with someone?
Traditionally, you know, people used to ask me what I did, and I would say we do web development, you know. So it started with the technology, and it started with being able to build a website. And that's still a big part of what we do, building websites and, in particular, e-commerce sites so people can transact business online. But along with that and, of course, strategic consulting and helping people to really think through where they want to be down the road, we do a lot of content strategy and content development. So we actually build content. We do email marketing. We do social media marketing, helping people really just reach their clients, reach their new customers, and find new customers. And so, and then the biggest thing we do is what we call search marketing, which is SEO, search engine optimization, and pay-per-click, which is what Google AdWords for the most part. And so those are the main things we do. We help people keep their website up date. We help them implement content marketing strategies. So we help develop content. We help them implement the content. We help do the search things that need to be done to make sure that they're getting found on the internet and that they can continue to be build their online presence.
Let's talk about the two. Let's start with the website. You do website design, and we now have Wix out there. There's so many alternatives where people can create their own website. And what are the pros and cons for that?
Yeah, sure. I usually don't discourage people if folks think they can do it themselves or they think their nephew can do it. If they'll give me the opportunity, I explain the value of what we do because we have a comprehensive process for building a really solid website that's flexible, that will last you many, many years to come, and then also that's properly indexed throughout the internet so that Google is happy with your website. And so that means things like, you know, meta tags and things that you can do for search engine optimization, but also the flexibility. We use something called Drupal, which is an open source system. It's similar to WordPress. I usually say it's kind of has a steeper learning curve than WordPress, and I believe it's more powerful, and the upside potential of Drupal is really great. But it's free, and that means it's open, and that means that if somebody leaves from us, they get to keep their website. So you take that asset with you, and you can go find somebody else to host your Drupal site.
Yeah, so Drupal is like a WordPress. So do they create templates, or is it comparable to Wix, like a Wix website where you can create it own, starting with a template? Is it similar to that?
Drupal is an open system that is really extendable and modifiable. So what we've done is effectively built our own platform using Drupal. But again, we stick to all the standards so that you can take a website that we've built, and you can then take it and host it on anybody that can host a Drupal site. We've done a lot of things that have made it easy for us to get a site. We feel like our out-of-the-box system typically meets about 80% of the needs of our clients, and then we do 20% customization to get them exactly what they need. And then, again, our focus is really on generating revenue. So we're all about trying to get it up and then putting the time in to generate traffic through organic search results or through pay-per-click type marketing.
Are there various categories of websites? In other words, there's just electronic brochure, and then there's ones that are various more interactive. Is there various categories that people should be thinking about?
Well, I suppose there are. I mean, I think every website, there's very few that really you just want to put up a postcard with a couple of pages or whatever. Generally, there's benefit to having a system in place, so some kind of, whether it's WordPress or Drupal or something else, but a means for you to very easily add content to your site. So number one, I would always recommend a flexible, easy-to-update website that you can create as much content as possible and have as much information about what you do as possible. And so I would divide it into two categories. One is what I would call a content-rich website, and number two would be an e-commerce site. So those are kind of how we break
it down. So break those two down a little bit. An e-commerce website is literally where you could do transactions, per se?
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to buy something, typically you can process a credit card and that kind of thing.
So for the mortgage industry, which is – that sounds like that's not what most mortgage lenders do, because they're actually needing to gauge, it's a longer process. But there's some aspects of what they could do. They could order a credit report online. So there are some things that they can do on an e-commerce basis. But most of what we do in the mortgage industry is provide information, a lot of information. And what are the most effective ways on websites to do that?
Having a content-rich website is really important to Google. So if Google's comparing two websites, they're going to kind of be biased toward the one that has the most information relative to what a person is looking for on the Internet. And so if all you have on your website is, you know, your phone number and where to call and what you do, versus if you have, you know, you're more or less a thought leader. So you're thinking ahead about what people are looking for. What are the questions people are asking? And providing answers. Providing answers, providing information gives you an opportunity to be found when people are searching for those things. I'll just give you an example of that. One of our clients is a junkyard in a small town in South Carolina, and they are now international company, shipping parts all over. They've got a specialization in a particular type of truck, and they now, you know, are constantly acquiring these trucks, taking them apart, and then shipping the parts all over the globe. One of the things that we've done, of course, we do pay-per-click advertising for them, but the other things we've done steadily over almost 15 years now, we've continued to always develop content and information source about the particular products. And so these particular types of trucks, there's some quirks with them. So it's hard to change the oil, or it's hard to find the transmission fluid on certain models and things like that. And so we built a huge library of information on our website through blog posts, through FAQs. We've also created dozens of videos, and some of which have hundreds of thousands of views. And so all these are mechanisms for people to find us and then be directed to the website and ultimately, in this case, call up and order some parts.
Tom, what are you finding as the most effective content on that particular website or any of the websites? What is the most effective way for engagement? I'm hearing more and more videos is just way, way up there. If you could do more in videos, you're going to be much further ahead. Is that true?
I do believe so. Yeah, YouTube is the second most popular search engine on the Internet, okay, after Google. So YouTube, that's where people go for information. And if you talk to young people, and the younger you get, it seems like the more likely they are to go to YouTube first and just say,
right,
there should be a video. There should be someone explaining that to me. So, you know, a lot of people wouldn't think to put a video out there, you know, explaining something about your mortgage, how the mortgage works. But sometimes having that kind of information out there and being consistent and having it on your website and having YouTube videos and all that tied together, over time it builds up your credibility and it builds up your what I call your Google juice, okay? You get, you know, your page ranking, your ability to show up high in the search results. And again, you might be only number one on Google, you know, within 10 miles of your office. But that's probably the most important place to be number one.
Yeah, if you have a business, if you're a loan originator and you're in a particular area, it's very distinctly possible that you could show up one. And then you say, well, yeah, but look at how much money some of these large companies are spending. Well, the reality is if you can trump that, is what you're saying. You can actually get yourself at a higher ranking than one of these big mega companies out there are spending gazillions of dollars in advertising. Let's talk a little bit about meta tags. Meta tags are an important part of a website, and if you could kind of explain to our audience what a meta tag is.
Really, it's just codes that you put within your website that wouldn't necessarily be seen by a person viewing the site. It's really behind, you know, kind of under the covers, behind the scenes, so that when Google and other search engine robots are kind of scanning the Internet at night, they can go out there and very quickly get information. So it's really to help the robots, and then by helping the robots, you know, they basically give you credit because you have organized information, you have everything the way that they want it, and so it's a way to try to encourage people to, you know, put all this information. So it's really just hidden codes on your pages that, you know, more or less describe the information. A good example is when you do a search on Google, typically in your search results, that first couple of sentences that you see after the page title is usually the meta tag. And very often it's the same as the first two sentences on the page, but it doesn't have to be.
So give us some best practices. If someone's, you know, designing a website and they're You know, they're on a low budget. They're trying to do it themselves. We're going to have you give your contact information a little bit later so people can get a hold of you should they get frustrated like I did and give up. But what are some best practices if someone's trying to build their own? And if you could walk people through how to do that.
Sure. Okay, so it depends on the tool that you're using to build your websites. But in the case of, say, WordPress, there's a plugin, and there's numerous SEO plugins that would allow you to, you know, typically by default, based on the information on the page, it will generate these meta tags for you. But the main thing is really it's all about keywords. It's about what are people searching for? What are they typing into the internet? So if they're typing in, and like say in my example, you know, Mitsubishi Fuso diesel truck parts, hopefully you have a page called Mitsubishi Fuso diesel truck parts. And the page title is Mitsubishi Fuso diesel truck parts. The URL, the actual address, is Mitsubishi Fuso diesel truck parts. And then all your meta tags describe the fact, you know, information about Mitsubishi Fuso truck parts. And then you have a bunch of actual parts on the page. So you have all that information tells Google, like, this is a really good candidate for what this person is looking for when they type in Mitsubishi Fuso diesel truck parts. And so it's really, it's about the content on your page, first and foremost, having a good page with good information that is relevant to what the person is searching for. And then the behind-the-scenes thing, it really is dependent on your tool, but you want to make sure that you've got those SEO plugins. In the case of Drupal, they call them modules, but it's the same idea. You want to make sure that you've got all those meta tags, a place for them, and you've got them properly keyed in. And then there's other things, too. There's always new tags. Like Facebook has its own thing called Open Graph. So, you know, these are things that you can do that helps Facebook, you know, how to treat your page when it's shared on Facebook. So there's a number of things that's constantly changing.
I want to get back to websites, but seeing as you brought up Facebook, what was the name of that thing that they just added?
Open Graph.
Open Graph. So let's talk about Open Graph.
No, I don't know how new it is. It's been around at least a few years, but it's just their own set of meta tags. So that when you share something on Facebook, if all the information is kind of structured and defined through the Open Graph meta tags, then Facebook can interpret it better. And so it's just another way of kind of a special way of coding your information so that Facebook can process it better.
So there's Facebook and there's websites, and you really almost need to have both if you're going B2C, business to consumers, correct? Would you recommend that?
We recommend a Facebook page, and we recommend a Google Plus page for every business.
Okay. All right. So what about Google Plus? You're a Google ad expert, and I understand you're certified in that. I mean, talk about – it's like there's so much people can be getting caught up posting that you could spend your whole time doing that, and it almost needs – like you need a professional to be able to manage all this. But a lot of people can't afford to do that. So the number one thing – is to have a website. Would you say that's the number one thing?
I think so. For most people, yes. And I mean, some people can get away with a Facebook page, but honestly, you know, usually as soon as you're big enough that, you know, if you're doing a business full time, you really need to have a website. But yeah, I think a Facebook page and a website is a good start.
Are the two places to really have. And then, and they refer to each other. Do they help with ranking? Does a good Google page, a good Facebook page help with Google ranking?
It can. It's more likely to, if you're sharing, like you'd definitely be linking back. And that's where the Google Plus comes in. And that's why we always recommend Google Plus, because there is evidence that, you know, if you consistently post on Google Plus, you know, you're more likely to show up in search results. And sometimes they even show information from Google Plus in your search results. And so Google's been kind of, you know, I would say biased toward Google Plus always because they want people to use it. Exactly.
Not surprising. Not terribly surprising seeing as Google Plus. Google Plus is owned by Google, and that's keeping it, promoting within their own ecosystem makes total sense. Right. Talk about landing pages. What is a landing page, and what is the significance of it for lenders and anyone wanting to attract attention?
Sure. So the landing page just means a page where people are going to come to your website. And so the most common landing page is the home page. Like if you've got a business card with your address on it, people are going to go to that address. If they search for you, typically, you know, it's going to be a link to your home page. But if you're particularly if you're doing paid ads, so we're now doing, let's just say we're doing paid advertising on Google. And so through Google, we're doing search marketing. And so you're targeting people looking for a mortgage lender nearby. Okay. So when you set up your campaign, you're going to tell Google AdWords that my keywords are things like mortgage lender nearby and that kind of thing. We're going to target a geographical area within so many miles of my office. And then you're going to create ads so that when people type in, I want a nearby mortgage lender, they'll see an ad that says mortgage lender, and maybe it has your address so they know you're close by. And then when they click on that ad, they're going to land on a specified page, which we would call a landing page. And the key is, based on specifically what you're marketing, what it is that you're selling, you want to have a landing page that is aligned with the advertising and with search terms that that person had keyed in. Let's say you were really focusing on agricultural loans. You might be looking, you know, use the word agriculture in your search keywords, use the word agriculture in your advertising, and then you want to use that word agriculture. You want to specifically talk about agricultural loans on your landing page.
Now, landing pages are different from websites, although they do have a unique address, correct?
Yes, it would just be one of many pages on your website.
So when you're creating those can be created pretty quickly.
Absolutely. It should not be a problem with a WordPress site, which is, again, you know, probably over half the websites are on WordPress. But even Wix or whatever you're using, if you can create a new page quickly, you can easily copy and paste from another one, you know, customize it to be exactly what you want, make sure it's named right. You know, you want to create an address that has those keywords in it, create a page that has all those keywords in it. And then you want to target your ads to land on that very relevant page.
If someone picks up the phone and calls you for the first time, what's the process you walk them through? How do you get people, or get out of people, the information you need to the point where you can really help them structure a digital marketing campaign?
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the first things that I like to know is, you know, are you looking to grow your business? Are you trying to grow, or are you just maintaining?
Hard to believe that anybody's just in maintenance mode in the mortgage industry right now. We're always growing. So if everyone's in the growing mode, where would you go next?
Yeah. So once we establish that you want to grow, then we start talking about your customers. Where are they? What are they looking for? How are you going to find them? And so that's where we would talk about content. You know, do you have information that you can share? What are you going to put on your website? Do you have anything you want to say? You know, some people have a hard time thinking what is there to say. You know, I like the truck parts example because it's like, well, you know, when you go to an owner of a junkyard and you tell him you need to have 100 pages of content on your website, he's going to go, it's just junk. Well, you know, what do we need that for? You know, there's nothing much to say. It's an engine, you know. But the fact is that over time we've established that there's a lot of things to know about these things. And people are constantly asking questions. And it turns out of all the sites on the internet, you know, we're the best place for answers on some of these parts and some of these questions. So you could be the best place on the internet for answers to these questions.
So there is a lot of companies out there that some of these loan officers have been using that are generated very standard, you know, pull it off the shelf, post it, and go out there. It's not creating anything unique. How important is it to have something of a unique nature? And unique doesn't need to mean you have to take a bunch of time to develop it, but how important is it to have a unique page versus using, I don't want to name the vendors out there that just produce a standard, you know, drag and drop, you know, landing page. How important is that?
It is important to be unique. It's important, you know, Google does not like to see multiple pages with the same information. It is absolutely, you know, it's kind of like if somebody came into your office, you know, they want to see a person with an opinion, person with a point of view. They want to learn from your experience. And so I think it's really just, I try to think of it in terms of taking what you do now personally and getting it out there on the internet. And sometimes it's hard for people to think about it that way, but you have, you know, most of these loan officers, they have a lot to offer their clients and they're constantly serving those clients. And so it's a matter of getting that written down and putting it in a form that's consumable on the internet.
Yeah, I look at the various personality types. We do a lot of consulting and helping you communicate, at least initially from your personality type. I'm one that picks up a cell phone, will create a video on a fly very quickly. And there's others that go, man, I don't like the way my voice sounds, and I sure don't like the way I look in video. You know, we talked about the power of video, but it doesn't have to be just video. What are some of the things that work? Is it when you're talking about content other than a video? What other things work other than videos?
Yeah, well, I mean, Facebook as an example, you know, even just Facebook posts. Another example is one where, you know, you post certain types of content and you learn over time that people are more likely to share. And so, again, it's a way, if you can provide information that's timely, very often that can be easily shared and people are more prone to share. But yeah, besides video, I mean, the biggest thing is what we call blog posts, okay? And so we try to have some means of a blog for every website because it's a great format to publish information. And Google just loves blog posts. You'll see, I mean, if it has a date and a timestamp and an author, Google really likes that. And if you continuously blog and speak about topics related to your business, you definitely do get credit for that by Google.
You do not have to create this on your own, listeners. You can have others do that for you. And so, Tom, I always talk to different ones. They go, Dave, that's great, but I look at a blank sheet of paper and I have writer's block. I just can't seem to start once I get something flowing. So for those, I agree with you. Blogging is hugely important. Obviously, this radio program is a blog. It's an audio blog, but it is a blog nonetheless. So there is a style for each of you listeners that you can find. If you're a writer, then start writing. If you're someone who's more verbal in your communications, then record some comments, and you don't have to put up a video. Just put up an audio file. But it's very effective if you can put up a video, which has all the same content, and then you can have a writer come in behind that and create some content out of that audio file or out of that video file. That's what I'm doing more and more on an increasing basis. What are you finding that most of your customers are doing out there, and the easiest way to get going on a blog? I agree with you, blogs are important. So what's the easiest way to get started on a blog?
It's really tough because most people, and that's where a lot of people end up hiring us to help them with that. Even though we may not be the subject matter experts, we can have a conversation with, you know, let's say a mechanic in this example or a mortgage lender. You can talk to us for 30 minutes and then we can go out there and generate several blogs. A lot of people just have a hard time sitting down and writing. And then they're never happy with what they wrote, so they never publish it. And so those kind of things. And so it really is a challenge continuously. And honestly, if business is good, then you don't want to spend your time blogging. You want to spend your time, you know, selling whatever it is that you make.
But it's really important to at least make some initiative towards this because, you know, someone who fails to do this, and this is where I start kicking people in the butt a bit. And I get up in their faces and I'm going, do you want to be in business? If the market is moving towards this, it's really incumbent upon you to figure it out. If you want to be relevant and stay competitive in the marketplace, stay present in the marketplace. And if everything's moving more digital, to say, well, I'm not good at that is not acceptable. It's not going to work.
It really is a challenge continuously. And if you can commit to it and have a partner that can help you, then, you know, consistent blogging, consistent content development, consistent, you know, putting good current information on your website is always going to benefit you.
A lot of people are going to want to contact you after this interview and reach out to you, at least get some insights. What's the best way for them to reach you?
The best way would be to go to broadstreetconsulting.net and fill out a contact form, and we will get back to you as soon as possible.
Tom, thanks so much for being here with us. I'm excited to have you start sharing some of these. And for some of those listeners, this may be really basic, but for those that are needing to get started, which is the vast majority of them out there, we need to start at the basics. And if you want to advance, if you are more advanced, I encourage you to get a hold of Tom. Again, get a hold of him. And what's the website again?
It's BroadStreetConsulting.net.
Tom, thanks so much for being here with us. Appreciate you joining in on this dialogue as we do this series. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you, David.
Folks, it's been great having you with us. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving holiday. Again, this is David Licken signing off, and we're grateful for you, our listener, and for making this podcast so successful by sharing it around with so many. Have a great Thanksgiving. Look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Licken on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Licken of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.